My name is Shelley McCarron, and I get to read our scripture today. It's John 20, 1 through 11. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So Peter went out with the other disciple, and they were going toward the tomb. Both of them were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. And stooping to look in, he saw the linen cloths lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen cloths lying there, and the face cloth, which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes, but Mary stood weeping outside the tomb, and as she wept, she stooped to look into the tomb.
Well, my name is Zach Thompson. I'm on staff here at Calvary Bible Church, and thank you so much for spending part of your Easter morning with us. This is such a special day for us here. And I want to focus our time this morning on the fact that there's power in questions, that the ability to ask a question has a few different purposes. For one, it can disarm people. You know those people that are just always antagonistic? You can see as they're just ramping up, they're building up, that they're about to go on a tirade. Maybe even today you might experience some of this. You might have planned family gatherings and you have that relative whose politics are just all wrong, who says that the world is going to explode after November 6th unless if things go their way, which is the only right way. Well, maybe just try out as they're going on this rant, asking a question. It could be as simple as, "Do you want potatoes?" Or, "How was your week this past week?" Or maybe more in depth, "Hey, last time I saw you, you were really struggling with this thing. How's that been going?" Or if it just gets really bad, you can ask, "Is it okay if I continue to put potatoes into your mouth for the rest of this meal?" On the other side of that, questions can be a way that show our care and our interest that we have in other people. It tends to be that if we don't really care about someone, we're not going to ask them too many questions. We're not going to go much deeper. If we're not interested in what they have to say, we're not really going to go further than that. But on the other side of that, when we really care about someone, when we're really interested in what they have, we ask questions. We are interested in what they are interested in. We show our care by asking questions. Questions as well allow for us to be introspective, to pause and reevaluate our position. Rather than just blindly spewing our opinions back, we actually listen and pause and reflect. It's vital for conversations that we actually, by asking questions, by responding to questions, we don't just respond to a position or opinion, but we actually have a conversation in this way. Jesus saw the power in asking questions. In the Gospels, the four biographies that we have of him, it's recorded that Jesus asked about 307 questions in the four Gospels that we have. And he did them for all those reasons. He disarmed his enemies by asking them questions. He diffused the situation. He would show his love and care for other people. He would focus on what was important both to him and for other people to hear. But more than anything else, when Jesus asked questions, either to his original listeners in first century Israel or to his readers in 21st century Thornton, Colorado, he allows for people to pause and reflect on his teaching. And with questions as such an important part of Jesus' ministry, it probably comes as no surprise that the first recorded words of Jesus in the Gospel of John, the very first thing that Jesus says is a question. This is John chapter 1, starting at verse 35. It says, "And then the next day, John," not the one who wrote this is where it's confusing, this is a guy named John the Baptist. "John the Baptist was standing with two of his disciples, two of his followers, and he looked at Jesus as he walked by and he said, 'Behold, the Lamb of God.' And when two of John's disciples heard him saying this, they decided to follow Jesus. And Jesus turned and saw them following and said to them, "What are you seeking?" And they said to him, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And he said to them, "Come and you shall see." And they came and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. The very first words of Jesus recorded in the Gospel of John is him asking a question. And we look at this question, he has these two people following him, and he asks them, "What are you seeking?" I mean, it seems like a simple enough question, right? But the way that these disciples respond, the way that we see them act in this passage, it shows us that this is more than just, what are you trying to locate? What is it that you're looking for? That sort of question that I tend to get asked whenever I go into a store of any kind. Apparently, just anxiety and panic immediately go on my face, and it leads to the very nice King Supers lady to ask, "What are you seeking?" Apparently, apples are kept with the rest of the fruit. Who knew? But that's not what Jesus is doing with this question. When he says, "What are you seeking?" it's more than just, what are you trying to locate? It's, what are you looking for in life? What are you trying to find? What do you think your life is missing that you are trying to add to it? What are you seeking? See, all of us are seeking something. We're all looking for something in our life. Even those whose lives are pretty good, that we're pretty happy, that doesn't stop us from looking for something more, looking to add to it. Maybe it's something that we've never experienced, or maybe we don't even really know what it is, but once we find it, we'll know that's what I've been missing out on. All of us are seeking for something more. And so the question for you is, what are you seeking? What is it that you think is missing from your life? What is it that you are trying to add? And the answer to that question, what we would say we are seeking, shows what we value, what our priority is. But more than anything else, it shows us what we think the purpose of our life is. I'm missing this thing in my life. I need this for my life. That shows us what we think our purpose is. What are you seeking? I have a list of some things that it could be. We might be seeking identity. I mean, we could be in high school at this time, which is a really important stage of self-discovery, or maybe we just have gone through a big life change and we're trying to figure out who am I anymore, or just that question that we ask from time to time, who am I really? We might be seeking identity. Or we might be seeking meaning, something that holds up, that stands the test of time, that gives purpose, that gives understanding to what happens around us. We might be seeking freedom, either from something or to something, or happiness, something that's good, something that holds up, something that at least will feel good, if nothing else, or explanation, a way to make sense of this world, an answer to what we see and experience. Beauty, something that's truly valuable, that has goodness in itself. We might be seeking hope, something that we can hold on to, something that we can look forward to, or justice, to holding accountable those who do wrong or situations that are unfair, or justification, the making right of wrongs. And not just that wrongs are being held accountable for, but there's goodness that comes out of the wrong that's been done. We might be seeking wholeness, reconciliation, love. What are you seeking? See, the sad reality is just by its nature, the fact that we are all seeking something shows us that we don't have it yet. You don't need to seek for something that you already have. The fact that we are looking for these things shows us that these are parts of our life that we're missing, that we would love to add, that we feel we need to add. So often, as we try to find these things, it's defined by unmet expectations. We're looking for something. We thought we'd have it by now, but we still don't have it yet. Or we just go from thing to thing to thing, trying to figure out, when is this gonna happen? How do I find this? Maybe this next one will work out. Or maybe our life is just described by the croonings of Bono. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Whatever it is, so much of our seeking is defined by unmet expectations. And the way that we respond in that, or this tends to bring about a couple different responses that we might have. Maybe we just start to downplay it. You know, it really wasn't all that important to me anyways. But as much as we might say that to ourselves as a way to protect ourselves, it doesn't take away that need that we have, that feeling of, I am missing this. I would love this. Or maybe we become cynical or calloused, and we look with skepticism to anyone who claims to find something that's meaningful or gives them purpose. Yeah, right. If I couldn't find it, neither could you. Or maybe we just run ourselves ragged to the next thing in a desperate attempt. Maybe this will be the one that gives me just a taste of something real. All of us are seeking something, and so often our searches, our quest, our looking is defined by unmet expectations. And this is where I so appreciate this question of Jesus, that he starts off his ministry, a question that all who read this passage, that's still relevant for us as people seeking 2,000 years later, when Jesus asks, what are you seeking? I find it interesting that this question shows up two other times in the Gospel of John, or this question, at least in a similar way, shows up two other times in the Gospel of John. One is when Jesus is arrested. Though he did nothing wrong in his entire life, he always did good. He brought life and blessing and hope wherever he went. He taught people what was true. Though he did nothing wrong, Jesus willingly goes to the cross. He dies this death that he did not deserve. And all that starts as these people come up to arrest him, knowing where this will lead, knowing what is going to happen. Jesus asks the question, what do you seek? And then he asks the question one other time. So he starts his ministry. He starts his most important work that he does, going to the cross with this question. And then one other time in the Gospel of John, he asks this, and that's in John chapter 20, in the passage that was just read for us not all that long ago. But let me recap some of the scene for us, just to remind us as to what is happening here. And then we'll jump into the passage in just a little bit. But to remind us of the scene, Jesus went to the cross. Jesus died. He was buried in a tomb. And it's now been 3 days since he died. And we have this woman who is one of Jesus' followers, who knew him, who was rescued from him, who was given new life because of Jesus, who was so close to him. We see her going to Jesus' tomb. And yet she doesn't do so expectantly. She's not skipping on her way to the tomb because she thinks she might know how the story is going to end. No, she just thinks the story has ended. Because the other gospels tell us why Mary goes to Jesus' tomb. She goes to prepare his body. In all the rush of Jesus' execution on the Friday prior, his body was not prepared according to their custom. And so Mary goes to write this. And what that tells us is Mary goes to Jesus' tomb with unmet expectations. She followed him. She put her trust in him. She thought that Jesus was going to be able to do incredible things, great things, but now he is dead. What further hope is there? What more can we expect from him? You don't tend to make burial plans for people that you still have expectations of. Mary followed this man Jesus, and now he is dead. What more is there to expect? We have records from around the time of Jesus that there were people who, on the surface, looked a bit like Jesus. They promised that they were going to make Israel great. They were called great teachers, maybe accredited with a miracle or two, had a following. And yet, when these people died, these messiahs died, and they almost always were killed, all their followers basically had the same reaction. Well, I guess this wasn't it. This didn't work out. We thought this was going to be the one. We thought this was the one that we were seeking, but clearly he's dead, so let's try to find someone else. And it looks like that's how Jesus' followers respond in this case too. We trusted in him. We had hoped that he would do some incredible things. We followed him. We saw him do great things. We thought this was the one. We thought this is who we were seeking, but now he's dead. So let's go find something else. See, if you read this Easter story as one who comes back to life after being dead and think that that's a little too much, well, that's how the people in the Bible understood the story too. You even see it as Jesus' followers go to the empty tomb. There's no reaction like, you know, Jesus, that crazy Jesus, he said he was going to be raised and now look at him. No, the reaction instead is, huh, this is weird. And then they go back to their life. Or you have Mary crying by the tomb, but she's not crying out of relief or expectation. She's just concerned that someone moved the body. That's it. There's no deeper meaning. She's just there in her unmet expectations. This is John chapter 20, starting in verse 11. It says, "But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. And as she wept, she stooped to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had laid, one on the head and one at the feet." Just a little quick nugget for those familiar with the book of Exodus, the second book of the Bible, or at least familiar with Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a really cool object that symbolizes God's presence, his work going out to all places, called the Ark of the Covenant. Interesting, you have an angel on one side of it and an angel on the other side of it. Just a fun little tidbit. So he saw two angels sitting, one were at the head and one at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "They've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they've laid him." And having said this, she turned and around and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Here we see Mary, she still doesn't get it. She's here mourning. She has this incredible sight. She sees the tomb empty. She sees these two angels sitting there. She's been told by Jesus over and over again, 3 days and I will rise, 3 days and I will rise. She's been warned of what's going to happen, and yet she still doesn't get it. She is blinded by these unmet expectations that she had. She had hoped in Jesus. She expected from him. She thought that this was who she was seeking, but now he's dead, and there's no other hope beyond that. There's nothing else to look for. And without even realizing it, she is going to be asked the very same question that Jesus asked to start his entire ministry. The question that put him on the path that led him to the cross. The question that led to him explaining what his death would mean, that his death was going to mean life for all of his followers. The question that he asked in the Garden of Gethsemane that led him to the cross. She gets asked this very same question as well. Look at verse 15. It says, "Jesus said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping?'" That's not the question. That was kind of an extra spare one at the beginning. This is the actual question. "Whom are you seeking?" And supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him and I will take him away." She's asked this question, and maybe you see it changes ever so slightly. Jesus at the beginning of his ministry said, "What are you seeking?" The same question that we ask of ourselves all the time. What is it that I'm looking for? What do I think that I'm missing? What more is there to add to my life? What is my purpose? What's value? What am I looking for? What am I seeking? And yet the question changes ever so slightly to a greater question: whom are you seeking? Because of the Easter story, what we see is Jesus, who lived this perfect, sinless life, who never did anything wrong, goes and dies this death, dies on the cross. He tells us in our stead, because we are people who hurt others with our words. We are people who have harmed others with our actions. We who on our best day fall short of our own standards, let alone the standards of a perfect and holy God. A God who's given us life and shows us a way to live that's for our good and for our glory. And yet we live our lives as if we gave it to ourselves. And we know what's best for us. And what this has led to is it leads us separated from the God that we were meant to be with. And where has that left us? Seeking. We turn away from God to try to find something on our terms that fits in our timetable, that fits our expectations. And we just go from thing to thing to thing to thing, trying to find something that satisfies, and it doesn't. Trying to find something that we can hold on to, and it doesn't. And yet what we see in the Easter story is it shows us that those things that we are seeking, those things that we're looking for, what we are trying to add to our life, the question gets surpassed and exceeded from going from "what are you seeking" to "whom are you seeking?" Because what you are seeking is found in Jesus. You want an identity? Well, because of the story of Easter, you have value, dignity, purpose, and worth that's not found in the changing of circumstances or moods or cultures, but is rested on the completed work of Jesus. You want to find meaning? Well, because of the story of Easter, you can find truth in both the good and bad circumstances. You want freedom? Well, you are freed from the endless searching of trying to find something, trying to find anything, and freed from that to find new life that's found in Jesus. You want happiness. Well, you have rooted satisfaction and contentment because of what Jesus did on Easter Sunday. You want an explanation. Well, you have a way to make sense of yourself and human nature and human history because they all find their fulfillment in Jesus. You want beauty. Well, the most common expression that's given to us of people who meet the resurrected Jesus, either on Easter Sunday or the days following, is their eyes were open. Because of what Jesus has done, we see the whole world anew. You want hope, especially in the face of evil and death. Well, Jesus is the one who conquered death and will vanquish all evil. You want justice. Well, Jesus is one who holds all accountable, who uses his power not for evil, not to manipulate, not to exploit, but to give people access to God. You want justification. It's not enough to hold people accountable for their wrongdoing. It's not enough to say, you did bad, here's punishment for it. But we need good to come out of it. We need there to be good things, not just punishment for evil. Well, justification happens on this day. First, us with God. We have access to God, this God we're desperate for, who we are seeking. We find that first in him, and then that justification goes out to the whole world. You want wholeness. Well, because of Easter, Jesus takes our brokenness and makes us new. You want reconciliation. Well, this begins first with our reconciliation with God, and that goes out to every place that we take it to. You want love. Well, what greater picture of love is there than what Jesus accomplished for you on Easter? All that we are searching for, all that we look for in this life finds its fulfillment in Jesus. In a day that looks like another one of unmet expectations, we had trusted in Jesus, we hoped in him, but clearly we are wrong. In a day that looks like unmet expectations, we see what Jesus does for Mary, what he does for me, what he does for you, and we are forever changed. Jesus, because he was raised, because the tomb is empty, because Jesus lives, we are forever changed. Our expectations are met in him. And what we see as well is Mary gets included into that part of the story. He doesn't leave her weeping there, wondering where has the body been moved. Here she is in her expectations. She had trusted in Jesus. She had hoped in him. She thought that he might be able to do something, but now the only hope that she has is to try to locate a corpse. Well, Jesus in this passage helps her to see whom she is seeking, even when she doesn't fully realize it. This is John 20, verse 16. Jesus said to her, Mary. And she turned and said to him in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. He just calls her by her name. Mary is there thinking that someone moved the body. She thinks that this person behind her is the gardener. For whatever reason, she can't recognize that this is Jesus. And Jesus doesn't correct her. He doesn't say, no, I'm not the gardener. I'm Jesus, come on. He doesn't say anything like that. He just calls her by name, something she would have heard dozens of times in following him. The tenderness that he treated her with, the rescuing that he did from her in the story, the personhood that he gave her, the dignity that he treated Mary with, it's just in calling her by name that she recognizes anew the hope she can have in Jesus, that he is the one she's been seeking for. Makes me think of a passage earlier in the Gospel of John. It's in John chapter 10, and it's really pertinent to Easter. It's where Jesus predicts the events of Easter. He says that no one takes my life for me, but I laid from me, but I laid down my life. And he says, I laid down my life for my followers. That's how we make sense of the Easter story. Jesus says, I am going to die so that my followers can have life. But it's not just the events of Easter. There's a really interesting detail in there. He talks about his relationship that he has with his followers. He says, my followers know me. Those who put their trust in me, they know my voice. But more than that, I know my followers. And I call them by name. By name. See, the same call that happens on this first Easter is the same call that happens on this Easter all these years later of Jesus calling you to seek, to find what you are seeking in him as he calls you by name. That the call on this first Easter was him saying, Mary, but the call this Easter is him saying, Pam. Or Kate, or Jean, or Haley. Him calling you by name. See, nothing in this world knows you by name. Nothing can keep its promises like Jesus. I mean, all that you find will make promises to you. I mean, throw off the shackles of God. That is how you find true freedom, only to feel more and more lost. I mean, set for yourself what is right for you, only to be plagued with doubt and anxiety and worry. Keep searching. You'll find something eventually. Just keep trying and trying, only to be exhausted and running out of hope. And as we do so, we miss the risen Jesus who calls you by name, who is the one that you are seeking. This is the Jesus who knows you, who gave his life for you, who demonstrated on Easter that nothing, nothing will keep you from him. And so we can respond in the same way that Mary does in this story. She was one who was stuck in her unmet expectations, who thought all was lost, who thought there was nothing more to hope for. And yet when Jesus calls her by name, she gets up, runs back to the disciples and says, "My search is over, for I have seen the Lord." For us on this day, as Jesus calls you by name, invites you to find the end of your seeking as well, let this not be another day where we cry out, "I still haven't found what I'm looking for," but be the day that you can leave here saying, "I have seen the Lord."